Have you ever wondered which girls really run the world?
Welcome to Feministry with Faith and Sophie, and we're going to take you through the fabulous females of history.
Great women make great history.
Well, 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 you wouldn't believe who is finally back on air. Good evening and TGIF. That is, thank goodness, it's Feministry time. It has been a hot, hot minute since you've heard our voices, and we've definitely missed forcing our loved ones to listen and give you some history while we're on air. But we know they're listening tonight for one last final Feministry episode. It's been a while since we've chatted in these... It's been a while since we've sat in these chairs, clearly, for 30 minutes of history, and you're in luck because tonight we'll be sitting in these chairs for an hour of history, yapping, mispronunciations, I've already done one, for our very final episode of Feministry, and cue the tears, I think Faith and I are about to be sobbing by the time the hour is up.
Probably. I'm full of anxiety right now because we just couldn't find our intro, so it was a very stressful 5 minutes.
It's been
minutes.
That long. They've already deleted it.
I swear I had it, but I couldn't find it, so I'm a bit stress on edge right now, but I know about 5 minutes, I'll probably be very sad. So enjoy this episode.
Right now she's like, I don't even want to do this.
I'm just shaking. I'm just hungry and I'm done. The stress of this intro. But we had to play it for our very final episode. Now, Sophie and I are very glad to be doing one more show. Like I said, we are also very sad because Feministry is our baby and we've been doing this show since 2021. And since then, we have finished uni and are now off doing adult things, which unfortunately is why we had to say goodbye to the show.
Yeah, we didn't actually even say goodbye because we were planning to do it, but as people know, life gets in the way. But here we are, adult lives doing it. I'm actually getting sad when you were saying that. I was like, the eyes are swelling.
I was writing it. I was like, oh, okay.
I guess for those wondering, I mean, anyone probably listening knows what we've been doing for the last couple of years. But for anyone listening, Faith and I have both graduated earlier in the year at the end of last year, but had our official graduation, which was super exciting. I spent a year working on the local news as a television reporter, which is really exciting. And now I'm working in the podcast space, doing a podcast about women in sport.
Yay.
So very similar, but will never quite hold the place in my heart that Feministry does. As for Faith, she hasn't quite ventured as far, maybe from the building next door, I think.
I haven't left Bathurst. I'm currently working at 2MCE, so I'm here all the time helping everyone create some good shows, but maybe not as good as Feministry, but you know, they are pretty good too. I will give them that. So I have been helping here and working here, so you might still hear my voice in other shows, so you can enjoy my voice for a little bit longer, but Sophie's voice is disappearing, unfortunately.
So even though this show is an hour, for those listening, you probably know that Faith and I can yap, so I'm sure this hour will still go very fast and we will still run out of time, despite hopefully being prepared, but being prepared in usual Faith and Sophie fashion, which means doing this like an hour ago.
Yes. Did we write this episode today?
No one needs to know. It's fine. So as we mentioned earlier, tonight's episode is an hour long, Faith put full exclamation marks. This means we will spend the first half an hour talking about one fabulous female in history and spend the next half an hour talking about our highlights from the show in kind of a top five countdown. Hopefully we get to do all five. That's fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Time
pending.
Yeah, but we'll make it work.
Yeah.
We hope you enjoy our last episode as much as we have enjoyed creating it. This is episode
46.
I swear we've done more than that.
No, it's 46.
That's a lot of episodes.
I know, it's a lot of episodes. So if anyone's missed any, look, they're all on the 2MCE website. So go catch up, listen to them all.
And we'll update our socials so they're perfect. It's a nice little collection of our show.
I am two people behind, but I promise I'll catch up, okay? So make sure to like them so I feel good. At Feministry 2MCE.
I'm kind of annoyed we didn't make it to 50 episodes, but we should just really start this show.
Yeah. Let's get into it.
Without further ado, welcome to Feministry on 2MCE, where great women make great history. I'm Sophie.
And I'm Faith. And on tonight's very last episode, we'll be discussing Austrian-born American actress and inventor Hedy Lamarr. Now, our girl Hedy starred in over 25 films and stage productions, who decided that beauty wasn't just what she was going to be known for. She co-invented a radio guidance system for Allied torpedoes that used sped spectrum and frequency hopping technology to defeat the threat of radio jamming by the Axis powers. So, very World War II based this episode. Now, the idea of frequency hopping helped with the invention of Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and GPS, so she is now known as the mother of Wi-Fi, and that is what makes her Feministry's Fabulous Female of the Week. So let's get into it.
Our girl Hedy was born Hedwig Eva Kaisler in Vienna, Austria on November 9th, 1914, into a Jewish family. Hedy was an only child, relatable, who received a lot of attention from her dad, who was a big bank director, unrelatable, and he encouraged her to be inquisitive and get that big brain thinking.
Now, Hedy and her dad often went for long walks where he would talk about machinery and the inner workings of mechanics such as cars or the printing press, and this got our girl's brain working. And at only 5 years old, she was found pulling apart her music box and reassembling it to see how it operated. Her mum, on the other hand, was a concert pianist and got Hedy into the arts, having her begin ballet and piano lessons at a young age. Now, Sophie, so far in this 20 seconds we've been talking about it, would you say you're hashtag team mum or hashtag team dad?
Well, I know what her life ends up being like, so I feel like I'm too biased to comment.
Well, lucky for you, our fabulous female managed to be hashtag team both during her lifetime. But for the start of this episode, we're going to be ignoring Hedy's big brain and instead focusing on her beauty, much like everyone else did.
So at age 16, Hedy was discovered by director Max Reinhardt and soon had her first small film role by 1930 in a German film called Money on the Street. However, it wasn't until 2 years later at age 18 that she gained recognition as an actress for her role in the controversial film Ecstasy. In early 1933, at just age 18, Hedy was given the lead in Gustav Machadi's film Ecstasy, where she played the neglected young wife of an indifferent old man. Now, there is a lot of controversy surrounding this film. In fact, it was actually banned in Germany and blocked in the US for being too obscene.
Yep, so let's be honest, it was a bit of nudity.
Bit risque.
There was a little bit more to that, not sure if I can say on community radio. So if you're interested, just search it up. It's not that hard to find. But yeah, pretty much was nudity and a little bit more than that. So Hedy has stated that she was tricked into doing this scene, especially at such a young age, and how the script actually never stated that any of it was going to be in it until it came time to record. Now, understandably, she was now a bit cautious when taking on other roles. But luckily for us, this minor bump in the road did not stop our girl from getting that bag and acting in many film and stage productions.
In one of her stage roles, she starred as Empress Elizabeth of Austria in Sissi. Critics loved it, and so did all the men who went and saw it, sending roses to her dressing room and trying to go backstage and meet her. But Hedy sent them all away, including one man who was a bit too obsessed with getting to know her, and that man was Friedrich Mandl. Mr. Friedrich was an Austrian military arms merchant and munitions manufacturer. That is a lot of M's in that sentence. Military merchant and munitions manufacturer. That is a great tongue twister. So Mr. Friedrich was the third richest man in Austria. Hedy fell for his charming personality and supposedly fascinating personality, which could have been due to the fact this guy was hella rich.
Cha-ching. Cha-ching. Now, that's about as good as Freddie gets, because his red flag was that...
As good as he gets. We've read like one line.
Just you wait, guys. Just you wait. So he unfortunately had ties to both Benito Mussolini and Adolf Hitler, which was already bad in itself, but even worse when you remember that Hedy's parents were Jewish. So love that. Unsurprisingly, Hedy's mum and dad did not approve of Freddie, but Hedy was all like, oh, but daddy, I love him, and kept seeing him.
Oh, we should have played that song.
I know.
Oh my gosh. I could have played Taylor Swift in the last episode. So on the August 10th, 1933, despite all of that, Hedy and Freddie married. Was this relationship goals? No. She was 18 years old and he was 33. Freddie's second red flag, and... we're only now third paragraph now. Here it comes. For Freddie's third red flag, we found out in her autobiography that Freddie was an extremely controlling husband who prevented her from pursuing her bustling acting career. She felt as though she was kept, quote, a virtual prisoner in their castle home.
Like we mentioned earlier, Freddie unfortunately had close ties to Mussolini and Hitler, even selling munitions to the Italian government. Yikes. Hetty even stated that both dictators had attended parties at the Mandel home. Bigger yikes. Bigger yikes there, Hetty. Now, although Freddie was all like, stop following your passion, stop acting, he did bring our girl along to business meetings where he talked with scientists and other professionals involved in military technology. These conferences were her introduction to the field of applied science and later nurtured her latent talent in science, which we'll be hearing about in a little bit.
So, we're all done. That was all the good for Freddie. That was all he did good for her career. And soon, Hetty made the best decision she could have made at the time, which was also probably a big decision at the time and era if we think about it. She decided her husband was unbearable and separated from him, like any of our historical queens decide to do.
Done.
In her autobiography, she wrote that she disguised herself as her maid and fled to Paris. But by some other accounts, she persuaded Mandel to let her wear all of her jewellery for a dinner party and then disappeared afterwards. In a quote, she wrote about her marriage, "I knew very soon that I could never be an actress while I was his wife. He was the absolute monarch in his marriage. I was like a doll. I was like a thing, some object of art which had to be guarded and imprisoned, having no mind, no life of its own."
She's a bit sad. Ick. Bit of a yikes on Freddie there. Now, luckily for Hetty, she got out and in 1937 arrived in London and met Louis B. Mayer, head of MGM, who happened to be scouting for talent in Europe. All right, go off.
Coincidence.
Because don't forget, she's from Austria, so that's in Europe, and she's ticking the boxes because she's also beautiful. So Lewis offered her $125 a week for a contract, but she said, nope, I'm worth way more than that, sorry, and managed to impress him enough to secure a $500 per week contract. So that was a bit of a massive slay. So Miss Hedwig was persuaded by Lewis to change her name to Hetty Lamarr to... I just forgot what I was saying, to distance herself from her real identity and also the ecstasy lady, obviously the film, not the drug, with that reputation associated with it. Because of that nudity, they needed to separate that.
All I can think of is Mr. G.
ecstasy. I'm not going to sing that. In 1938, she was then introduced to Hollywood as the world's most beautiful woman. And she is really gorgeous. I was looking at photos and she is very,
very
beautiful.
That one of her with the stars, which we'll post on our Instagram and Facebook, is so pretty. When you first sent me that, we should do this episode on her. I was like, she is stunning. That's literally what I said to you.
Yeah, she's beautiful. Yep.
So that same year, Hetty was cast as the lead in Algiers alongside Charles Boyer, in which the film created a national sensation. According to one viewer, when her face first appeared on the screen, everyone gasped. Lamarr's beauty literally took one's breath away.
So true, I agree.
From this moment onwards, Hetty was typecast as the glamorous seductress of exotic origin. From 1938, our girl appeared in over 25 films, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
With her last one being in 1958. So that's 25 films in 20 years. Yeah. She's busy.
Yeah, she's getting that bag.
It wouldn't have been as quick to make a film back then, I'm thinking, surely.
I have no idea.
It was during this time that Hetty was then selected for the Most Promising New Actress of 1938 in a poll of area voters conducted by the Philadelphia Record Film Critic. In 1942, our Austrian Queen Hetty played an exotic Arab seductress in White Cargo, and that was a huge hit. British moviegoers also voted Hetty the year's 10th best actress for her performance in Samson and Delilah in 1951.
So despite playing the sexy seductress over and over again, Hetty was much the opposite in real life. Now, she was often lonely and homesick, and I thought this was a bit interesting. When asked for an autograph, she often wondered why anyone would want it. But we would want it, Hetty, okay? We would want it. So she also tended to speak about herself in third person too, which I thought was quite interesting.
A little bit of craziness going
on. Yeah, and then after playing the same character like a billion times, the lack of acting challenges bored Hetty, and she reportedly took up inventing to relieve her boredom, which I think it's funny because it's kind of, she's that, I was reading about it, she's just so sexy and that's pretty much her role in the film that more often than not, she actually barely spoke in the films.
Oh, because, she was just, like, existing.
Yeah, she'd say a few words and, like, yes, keep doing exactly what you're doing. So the fact that she's the 10th best actress, like, the fact that she's, like, in the top 10 is quite funny, I think, as well.
So over roughly the next 15 years of her acting career, Hetty married and divorced another 5 times after her divorce from Freddie. She's been busy.
Yep.
From 1939 to 1941, Hetty married Jean Markey, who was a screenwriter and producer. It was during this marriage that she adopted a baby boy named James Lamar Loder. Years later, now adult James, so we're jumping forward a bit, found documentation stating that he was actually Hetty's biological son with actor John Loder, who actually later becomes her third husband. However, a DNA test proved this theory to be incorrect,
yep.
But that would have been kind of a slay theory.
Yeah, yep. He was definitely no DNA to both Hetty or James, so...
Yikes. Nice try, buddy.
Nice try. But she, yeah, I don't know. She was being honest about it from the start. I don't know where he was going with that. But in 1943, so then Hetty did marry John Loder, who was also an actor. Now, they had 2 babies, Denise in 1945 and Anthony in 1947. Hetty had no more children after this, and her and John divorced in 1947.
A few years later, in 1951, she married nightclub owner, restaurateur and former band leader Ernest Teddy Stauffer before divorcing in 1952. She was then married to William Howard Lee, a Texan oilman, from 1953 to 1960. William later on ended up marrying film actress Jean Tierney. By 1963, Hetty married her last husband, Lewis J. Boyce.
So she is busy acting, busy getting married, busy getting divorced. She's a busy lady.
And let's just say... We're in 1963 right now, just to remember where we are.
Yep, yep. So around the height of Hetty's acting career also happened to be this Second World War. And our girl wanted to help out and join the National Inventors Council, but was reportedly told by many of the members that she could help a lot better by using her celebrity status to sell war bonds. So that brings us to 2 history word checks of the evening. We have got the National Inventors Council, which is a United States government organization established in 1940 as part of the Department of Commerce's Office of Technical Services. It was designed to serve as a clearinghouse for inventions with possible military and national defense uses and to bring these to the attention of the US Armed Forces.
Our second history word check, and I can't believe it's taken this long to have our first one. Normally we're like,
I know,
straight away.
I know.
So our second one is war bonds, which are debt instruments that are issued by governments to finance military operations and production in wartime. War bonds tend to appeal to the sense of patriotism in individuals who even see their purchase as a civic duty. Obviously, this wasn't the outcome she'd hoped for, not being able to join the Inventors Council. However, she did participate in a war bond selling campaign with a sailor named Eddie Rhodes. Eddie was in the crowd at each appearance, and Hetty would call him... Oh, my God, these names are killing me.
Hetty and Eddie.
Hetty and Eddie.
I couldn't not put that.
Again. So Hetty would call him up on stage. She would briefly flirt with him before asking the audience if she would give him a kiss. The crowd would say yes, to which Hetty would reply that she only would if enough people bought war bonds. So very clever marketing strategy there.
Yep.
After enough bonds were purchased, Hetty and Eddie would kiss and he would head back into the audience. Then they would head off to their next war bond rally. But yeah, pretty clever marketing strategy if you ask me.
It works, it works. Now, after this, Hetty appeared in a few more films until her acting career began to decline. In 1954, she arrived in Italy to star and produce Loves of 3 Queens. However, she lacked experience in producing and lost millions of dollars. Her last film was a thriller titled The American Animal in 1958.
Now that we've gotten through the glamorous Hollywood side of Hetty Lamar, let's get into the designing and invention side of her. As she was busy being a famous actress, Hetty didn't have a lot of time for formal training, and she was primarily self-taught. During her spare time, she would spend hours designing and drafting inventions. These included an improved traffic spotlight and a table that would dissolve in water to create a flavoured carbonated drink. That actually sounds really cool.
Yeah.
I want one of them.
It was very cool.
Yeah. She had some variety.
She did. She certainly did, like, acting, inventing, getting married.
table.
Look at these skills.
Fizzy table dissolving.
Yeah, literally. Now, we mentioned earlier, I keeps being me who has to say this, that Hetty often attended arms deals with ex-hubby Freddie in the late 1930s with a few dictators, which was also the reason he brought her, was possibly to improve his chances of making a sale. So if you've got your beautiful wife here, why would you not use her to get the sales, I guess? So although she was more likely the eye candy of the deal, her big brain was underestimated, and she learned that the navies needed a way to guide a torpedo as it raced through the water. Now, the idea of radio control had been proposed, but there was worry that the enemy might be able to jam a torpedo's guidance system and set it off its course. So if it's set on going where it needs to go, someone hacks into it, they can make it go where they need it to and hit back to the people who set it off. So that was a bit of a worry there.
So this problem she kind of had got her brain ticking, the mechanics were ticking over, and she began discussing with a new friend, composer and pianist George Anthiel. She had an idea of preventing any potential jams by frequency hopping. This piqued George's interest, as in his earlier musical work, he attempted synchronized note hopping in a score that involved multiple synchronized player pianos. George's idea in the piece was to synchronize the start of identical player pianos with identical player piano roles. I'm very musically untalented. This is meaning nothing to me. So the pianos would play in time with one another, right? Together, Hetty and George realised that radio frequencies could be changed similarly using the same kind of mechanism, but miniaturised. Mic drop. If they weren't connected, I would drop it right now.
Mic drop. So this new communication system was used with the intention of guiding torpedoes to their targets in war. So like we said, this system involved the use of frequency hopping amongst radio waves, wow, with both transmitter and receiver hopping two new frequencies together. This helped prevent the interception of the radio waves, thereby allowing the torpedo to find its intended target. So pretty much it just hops so quickly back and forth between waves that people aren't able to hack into it because it's continuously moving.
Yeah, like how could you hack into it if you don't know where it's going to be, kind
exactly,
of thing?
Exactly, yep. So you might have an idea, but it's on a different frequency now, so you've missed your chance.
That seems very ahead of the times.
It is very, very clever. Now, the team submitted their brilliant idea to the National Inventors Council in late December 1940, where the NIC introduced George, of course, to Samuel Stewart McCowan, Professor of Electrical Engineering at Caltech, to consult on the electrical systems. So don't know why Hetty wasn't part of that, but anyway, she got on top of...
I wonder if she thought that if she went, which is so sad, but they might have thought that looked down on her invention.
Yeah,
and gone, we can't take you seriously, but if he presents it...
Yeah.
That's, which is so sad. That's
I also wouldn't doubt that, yeah, at all. So Hetty then instead got on top of the legal side of things and hired Lyon & Lyon to draft the application for the patent. I knew that word too. I got a bit scared. Average feministry experience. The patent was granted. So it became known as US Patent 2292387 on August 11th, 1942, under Hetty's legal name at the time, which was Hetty Keisler Markey. So she was still married to her second husband, I believe, at the time.
So that's pretty cool that all got passed through. And although she didn't invent Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or GPS tracking, Hetty is now known as the mother of Wi-Fi, as her patent paved the way for the inventions to come. I guess that frequency hopping thing was from there they could come up with Wi-Fi and all the other things.
Yep, because that's how Wi-Fi works, is through high frequency hopping. So
wow.
Yeah. So it could have still been invented, but not as soon as it was.
Yeah.
Thanks to Hetty.
It's giving Rosalind Franklin energy.
Real.
So their invention was then proposed to the Navy, who, unfortunately for them, rejected it, stating that it would be too large to fit into a torpedo. The Navy then shunned them and broke Hetty and George's hearts to the point where they didn't have anything to do with their patent anymore. It was after this time that Hetty began selling war bonds with Eddie using her celebrity status.
So that whole kiss from the crowd thing came about just after her dream was just destroyed.
Right, so we've kind of done a little sidetracking time.
Yep,
okay.
Yep. So
they were kind of going on concurrently.
Yeah, yep. So this, her plan was rejected. Now she's going to go kiss Eddie and get some war bonds.
And it seemed to work for her.
Yeah, it's not what she wanted to do, but at least she was putting in the war effort. So in her later years, Hedy stayed relatively quiet to the public eye, with a few things worth noting. So our Austrian queen, Hedy, became a naturalised citizen of the United States on the 10th of April 1953 at the age of 38. Now that brings us to our very last history word check ever, crying, like means we've got tears right now, which is naturalisation. So naturalised citizen is the legal act or process by which a non-national of a country acquires the nationality of that country after birth.
So in the late 1950s, along with her former husband, one of them, W. Howard Lee, Lamar designed and developed the Villa Lamar Ski Resort in Aspen, Colorado. In 1960, Hedy was honoured with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame for her contribution to the motion picture industry at 6247 Hollywood Boulevard, adjacent to Vine Street, where the walk is centred. In 1966, her autobiography, Ecstasy and Me, was published. However, she stated that it was not written by her and a lot of it was fictional. Hedy then sued the publisher, stating that its ghost writer, Leo Guild, made a lot of it up. In a weird turn of events, Hedy was then sued by Jean Ringgold, who said that her book plagiarised material from an article he had written in 1965 for Screen Facts magazine.
Yeah, so it's a bit weird because, like, earlier we did mention stuff from her autobiography, which then could be true, but also might not. It's, yeah, a bit uncertain now, anything coming from her autobiography, Ecstasy in Me. Now,
I feel like she hated that movie. Like, why would she call it?
I'm not sure if she hated it. I think it was more so the fact that they tricked her into doing stuff she didn't want to do that was a bit damaging, but it also did throw her into the spotlight. So I think it's a bit of a love-hate relationship, I would say. But I'm not her, so I'm also not sure. Following her sixth and final divorce, the very last husband in 1965 from Lewis J. Boys, then Hedy actually just remained unmarried for the last 35 years of her life. So she was a single lady. Yeah, she's a single lady for the rest of her life. So in 1997, Hedy and her BFF / co-inventor George were jointly honoured with the Electronic Frontier Foundation's Pioneer Award. And our girl was also the first woman to receive the Invention Convention's Bowlby Nass Spirit of Achievement Award, known as the Oscars of Inventing, given to individuals whose creative lifetime achievements in the arts, sciences, business, or invention fields have significantly contributed to society. The following year, in Hedy's native Austria, they awarded her the Victor Kaplan Medal of the Austrian Association of Patent Holders and Inventors. So I'm glad she was still recognised while she was alive for the work that she did.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Like, a lot of our people we've talked about on this show are recognised posthumously for what they've done. And while that is so important, it's like that person needs to realise
they didn't know while they were alive. Yep.
So during the 1970s, Faith mentioned she'd had her sixth divorce. She became more and more isolated. She was offered several scripts, television commercials, stage projects, but nothing piqued her interest. Her eyesight began to fail and she soon retreated from public life and decided to live her best life in Miami Beach, Florida. In the last decades of her life, Hedy did not leave her house, with the telephone being her only means of communication with the outside world, including her kids and friends. She would chat up to 6 to 7 hours a day on the phone, but very rarely spent time with anyone in person during her final years.
I'm not sure if it's because, like, she was losing her eyesight and maybe because being such a beautiful person all her life, if she was just going through aging and if she just wanted anyone to see her looks-wise, perhaps.
That's so hard.
Yeah, that's my guess because...
And how do you want people to... You don't want people, I guess, to remember you
like
that.
Yeah, they want you to remember you how you were, like, beautiful and amazing.
So. She should be remembered by her work.
Yeah, which we're slaying her for both of them. Now, on January 19, 2000, Hedy Lamar passed away from heart disease, aged 85 years old. Her son Anthony spread some of her ashes in Austria's Vienna Woods as per her last wishes. In 2014, a memorial was built in Vienna's Central Cemetery where the remainder of her ashes were buried. After her death, many tributes to our girl Hedy came about, so she did have some when she was alive and some posthumously as well. So in 2013, the Institute for Quantum Optics and Quantum Information installed a quantum telescope on the roof of the University of Vienna, which they named after her in 2014.
Yay.
Yay.
So the mid-2010s seemed to be a busy time for Hedy's tribute. In 2014, she was posthumously inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame for frequency hopping spread spectrum technology. And I guess with that posthumous achievement, that's where we wrap up our final fabulous female on Feministry. There's a lot of Fs there. Hedy Lamarr proved that she was not just a pretty face, but beauty and brains, and helped pave the way for the invention of Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, GPS, and, of course, the creation of Feministry, because without her, we wouldn't be speaking into these microphones right now.
We would not. So, obviously, there was still radio happening and while she was there, but the frequency hopping definitely made things a lot easier. And we have her to thank. So, and even if you're listening through the radio waves and then anyone listening on their phones, if they're listening there, using Wi-Fi, or if you're connected to your car, you've got Bluetooth, they're using all this stuff thanks to Hedy.
Thank God they let us go for an hour, otherwise we'd be well over time.
Yeah, but literally.
We're going to play a quick song that I guess has been our theme song for pretty much the past 3 and a bit years, 4 years almost, and then we'll be back with our top five countdown of our favourite fabulous females of Feministry.
Who run the world?
Girls.
That was so cringy. We planned that 2 seconds ago.
As our best stuff is planned 2 seconds in advance.
Yep.
Speaking of, before we get into our top five, there is a few people we'd like to thank who I guess made this possible from start to finish. The first definitely want to thank is Lisa.
Lisa, we love you.
But she, I guess, let us do this crazy thing, let our idea come to life. We want to say thank you to Beck, who's listening, who has supported us to keep doing that through our older stages of uni and helping us get better. Thank you to both our parents who have pretty much listened every week to this show.
And to my dad who always said, every time I say Feministry is on, he goes, what's that? So thank you for that, Dad.
Mum sent a nice message in. And thank you to Ingrid who has also been literally... We never got her on the show, but we tried that first episode. But she has literally been there from day one.
She has. And Isaac, because he's going to make a comment about not mentioning him. So Isaac, you get mentioned too.
But and a lot of our friends who have listened as well. Yep. But I guess now we have to do our top five countdown.
Speed run in 15 minutes.
And it was very hard to pick five. Even going through picking this, I was like, we should have picked someone else. I was like, damn, I like this person. Yeah. Okay, Faith, you start with this one because this was your choice.
Okay, so coming in at number five on Feministry's Fabulous Females, we are taking it back to ancient China with Empress Dowager Cixi. So Cixi was a Chinese noblewoman, concubine and regent who effectively controlled the Chinese government in the late Qing Dynasty for 47 years. She ruled with intelligence, strength and ruthlessness and became known, for better or for worse, as the Dragon Lady.
What years are we talking about here, Faith?
So we are talking Cixi, 1835, 29th of November, so Sagittarius, if anyone's wondering. And she died on the 15th of November, 1908.
And I guess, what is she best known for?
So pretty much Cixi fell pregnant to her baby boy, Tongyi, and that meant her son was the only heir to the throne, the emperor. So on his deathbed, he summoned his highest ladies, Cixi, or one of them, and gave her a stamp. And then they had, because they both had sons, they worked together and pretty much Cixi got her son to be the ruler. So pretty much she became Empress Consort and helped rule with him pretty much.
She's got a lot of power.
Yeah. Yep. To summarize it as quick as I can.
And I guess, Faith, did you have a favourite thing about Cixi or this episode that we did?
Well, I thought it was very interesting because I thought she's so slept on in history. Like, I had no idea about her and I'm not sure many people know about her. I think...
And she was one... She definitely was one of the surprising...
Yeah, I thought
ones.
It was very interesting and, she's very powerful and very slept on. So I'm just happy to give her a name, happy for people to hear about her. What was your favourite thing?
I did laugh how I was looking back how bad our pronunciations were.
Real.
Of all the Chinese names. We tried our best. But there was a cool quote from her as well. Whoever makes me unhappy for a day, I will make suffer a lifetime. And I think that probably goes with the whole Dragon Lady
idea. She definitely did. Now, number four, Sophie, tell us about her.
So Edith Cowan was our one of our few Aussie women we featured. I think she was probably the most influential one we discussed. She advocated for state schooling and for the inclusion of sex education in the curriculum. She was also a dedicated campaigner for women's rights and for the protection of children. I reckon she could quite possibly be one of Australia's first modern feminists.
Agreed, agreed. Now, what years are we talking?
So she was born in 1861 and died in 1932 when she was 70. So, you know, some interesting, some pretty influential time span there.
Yeah, definitely. Now, she is, there's a thing she's most known for, but then there's something that she's really known for. And what is that?
So I guess she was pretty known for, I guess she was like a social reform, very social justice orientated. She was one of the founders of the Karikata Club, which became the centre of a movement for reform. Kind of lobbying for things like the passing of the State Children's Act, which established the Children's Court, and I think it eventually led to her getting an officer of the Order of the British Empire. But as she mentioned, what she was really known for was that in 1921, only 1 year after women were actually allowed to run for Parliament, she defeated T.P. Draper by 46 votes, and her victory made her the first woman in Australia to become a parliamentarian and only the second in the British Empire.
That's a slay. That's a massive slay, Edie girl.
Did you have a favourite thing? I know this was one I kind of suggested, but did you have a favourite thing about this episode?
Well, I did. I just guess the fact being the first lady in Parliament and all the work she did for, like, women's rights and children's rights, I think that's very important. And also, she's on the $50 note, and I love money, so that's a slay for Edith over there. And I know you've got a bit of a story to tell.
Oh, I've definitely told it when we did the episode.
Probably.
Go back and listen to all these episodes, people. Yeah. They're all still going to be there. Just because we're going, they are not. But yep. I thought it was so cool because the Karikata Club, the motto for that club was Spectrum Agenda, and I thought that was so weird because that was like my school motto. And I just was such a weird connection. And as I mentioned in that episode, like, how did we not even know that? Like, you think our school should have told us that,
yeah.
The fact how hidden these women are in history. But it says, let us be judged by our actions or judge me by what I do, which I think is very fitting because she did a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Slay.
Now, down to number three. We're onto the bronze on the podium. Who have we got, Faith?
We have got Rosa Parks. So she is an activist who everyone knows as the woman who refused to give up her seat on the bus. So although she's most famous for her role in the bus boycotts, the role she played in the broader American civil rights movement of the 50s cannot be underestimated, because I think that just definitely got the ball rolling in that instance. And that whole American civil rights movement, she just really got it started.
And she's not, I guess, as far removed as some of our fabulous other ones we've talked about.
Yeah, and she's...
she's pretty recent.
Unfortunately, very recent, yes. So she was 1913. She was born and died aged 92 in 2005. So that's pretty crazy how new she is.
Now, I know we've just touched on it, but briefly, I know I've got a long story there, but what is she most known for?
So pretty much she was at work, she jumped on the bus, ready to go home, and weirdly enough, the bus drivers had the powers of a police officer while they were in charge of the bus, and of course the bus was segregated with white people at the front, black people at the back. She was sitting there ready to go home. She's chilling, living her best life. Then the bus began to get a bit full and the white passengers started to stand up. Heaven forbid. So the bus driver went and said, sorry, Rosa. Oh, I wouldn't have said that, but get up. We've got some white people that need to sit down. And four of the black passengers also on there gave up their seats. But Rosa said no. So, ironically, she took a stand by not standing up.
Still one of the best lines.
Literally. So they said, why don't you stand up? And Rosa was like, I don't think I should have to stand up. And then the bus driver called the police and had her arrested. That's pretty much the best summary I could give of that.
And I guess that that whole incident eventually led to the Montgomery bus boycott, which eventually led to segregation on buses being abolished.
Yes, like definitely.
A year or two later, which was pretty massive. You've got a good quote.
I don't know.
I can see it in front of me, but I'll read it.
I get it.
She said...
oh, yeah, I found it.
I guess she was feeling she was very tired, and she said... someone asked her, like, are you feeling tired from all this protesting? And she said, no, the only tired I was tired of giving in.
Yeah, I do love that quote, yep.
And did you have a favourite thing about her?
I just think how brave, because that time I can imagine... well, I can't because... I'm not a person of colour or in that time period, but how scary that would have been to have done that. So I think, like, they could have killed her for that. And so I think she was very brave for having done that. And then she might not have realised that she just started something massive. So I think she just was like, nope, I'm not standing up. That was as simple as it was, and it just got the ball rolling for something huge in America. What was your favourite?
Mine is very much more superficial than that, but I just remember she was born in Tuskegee, and I just remember how much we laughed pronouncing that at the time. Or that's how you say it, right? Tuskegee?
Or Tuskegee? Tuskegee?
Exactly, okay.
Yeah, let's continue. Exactly. Now, Sophie, number two, the silver podium.
Yeah, silver medal.
Forgot the word.
Yeah. So the mother of radiation herself, Marie Curie, I thought she was pretty cool. I think this was one of our better episodes, and I won't forget you playing Toxic mid-episode.
That's hilarious. That's
it was
comedy.
Very funny at the time. Sorry, Marie, who's probably rolling in her grave. Marie paved the way for all scientists by not only discovering radium and polonium, but she was a large contributor for the treatment of cancer. So we're talking she was born in 1867, so a bit further removed
further back.
Again.
Still pretty recent, I'd say. So I know you kind of mentioned it, but what is she best known for?
So I guess she, in summary, she discovered radiation, and then a lot of people know her because she actually ended up dying of radiation poisoning. Yeah. But together with her husband, she was awarded half of the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1903. In 1911, she received a second Nobel Prize in chemistry. Now, it is important to note that Marie was the first ever person to be awarded a Nobel Peace Prize. Not just the first woman, the first ever person. So I think that is pretty awesome. They speak for themselves, and I think when you put them in the context of what she was growing up in to do something STEM-related in that time.
It was a STEM sleigh, if
you
will.
Yeah, it was a STEM sleigh. did you have anything, a favourite? I feel like that was an episode I pushed, but did you have a favourite?
Yeah, well, Sophie, I know you've got something very good written for this one, so mine's very superficial compared to yours. I'm going to say I just actually enjoyed the episode. It was a fun one, especially with Toxic playing. As someone, I'm not really big on science, so I just have a lot of respect for the work that she did, and especially in such a man's world. And I learnt a lot in the episode too. So what was yours?
Oh, my favourite was still that poem that I brought in. It was called Power, and it was kind of about Marie Curie by Adrienne Rich. I won't read the whole thing because we're time crunching, but one of my favourite lines was kind of like, she died a famous woman, denying her wounds came from the same source of her power. And I think that was just what we talked about, that fact that she discovered it, but the fact that she discovered it meant she also had to die from it.
Yep, yep.
Which is pretty deep, but yeah. Now we're at our most coveted, fabulous female forever of all time in femin history.
We are at Agrippina the Younger.
Where else better to start than who we did our first episode
on? Our very first episode. So she was a Roman empress, 49 to 54, so a fair while back, and she was the mother of Nero, who was an emperor. Now, this is, again, a very, very long time ago, but she was best known for being a tyrannical mother of Mad Emperor Nero, maybe where he got it from. She was a sister of another emperor, Gaius, and her uncle was also Claudius, so she was well, well within that family.
And when Faith says long time ago, we're talking 50 to 59 AD. Like, she is up there with the oldies.
She sure is.
So during her lifetime, she kind of made extraordinary inroads to power for a woman at the time, and she kind of got to the point where she was on equal footing with her husband and with her son, even though she wasn't officially a ruler. She'd kind of had such equal influence. We don't have time to go into it, so go back and listen to one of our first episodes, but some of the favourite things were that she literally survived 3 assassination attempts because she was just so clever.
Yeah, from her own son too, yep.
And it was only because she had so much power. Her son was like, we got to get rid of her.
Exactly, yep.
Obviously, our favourite person, Faith, but did you have a reason why we love her so much and why she got the gold medal?
You've got a very good reason, which I agree with. I'll let you say that one. But also, she was just a powerful boss babe. Like, let's put it like that. She was a mother. She did what she could for the imperial family. She got her son ruling when he wasn't actually supposed to. She got him there and then managed to get a bit of cheeky control for herself too. So, Sophie, what's your beautiful reason?
Well, through 46 episodes, people might have forgotten, but this is actually how Faith and I first kind of bonded and how feministry came to life, so a bit of a fitting way to wrap up. But I remember it was like at one of our first days of uni, and being the nerds we were talking about how we both did history at school, and we both bonded over our love for Agrippina. And I literally remember sitting in the car park up at Chifley, and we should do this show, and it was like my first week of uni. I like living out of home for the first time. We cooked a whole kilo of pasta. I was like, what do I do with a whole kilo of pasta?
I ate it.
But that is how Feministry came to life. And we showed up every week since. I don't know how we did that when we were very busy, but it was kind of always nice to get here and speak. And even though we would stay up late to write the scripts or do them very close to airtime.
Yep.
They would always get done, and we were pros by the end.
46 episodes, so go reflect. Go listen to all the shows again, guys. It's on the 2MCE website, okay? And look at all our Instagram posts, because there's heaps on there.
Faith put a lot of effort into
them. Thank you. Even though I'm really behind. Again, I'll catch up. Feministry at 2MCE.
It will be a nice little
Feministry 2MCE.
Historical record of our own. And I thought a fitting way to end was I read this. I found this thing that I will read out from our first ever episode. So it said, I'm Sophie.
And I'm Faith. And for our first episode, we will be discussing one of our personal favourite females in history, Agrippina the Younger.
But before we start, we just wanted to briefly let you know who we are and what brought us on the airwaves of 2MC. I'm Sophie, I'm 18 from the Central Coast.
And I'm Faith, I'm also 18 and from Parkes, New South Wales. We both have a common love for history and female empowerment that we are so keen to share and discuss with the listeners of 2MCE, and we're glad you're here for the ride.
And I think to celebrate our final farewell, there's no better way to have wrapped up than that. We're in our final minute of our final show, which is really sad. Faith's going to probably give me the look in a second, but
my eyes are watering, guys.
It is actually really sad, but thank you for letting us burn your ears, and
thank you for listening to us mispronounce words all the time and completely butcher things. But I hope you learnt something and had a lot of fun with us, because we enjoyed the ride and we hope you did too.
And for one last time?
Not yet. We've still got a bit of time.
Oh,
we can't. We can't give it ends and then make it awkward.
But okay.
We love you all. Thank you so much for listening, and we really appreciate you being here for the ride, and we love you a lot.
For one final time.
Great women make great history.